Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Thunderbolt Earth, the podcast series where we discuss anything related to Earth. This week's topic is weather, so I let you guys ask questions on Twitter about the weather, and the questions that stood out to me the most was, what are some methods of how we can predict or modify the weather? So let's first talk about ways we can predict the weather. The first method I'm going to be discussing is climatology. The climatology method is a simple way of generating the forecast. Climatologists use this method after they analyze weather statistics gathered over many years and they average them out. This method is used to predict the weather at a location on a specific day based on the weather for that same day in the past. This method was first used in the 1940s when a climatologist named Helmut Landsberg became the first person to write in English about the use of statistical analysis in climatology and applied this information and analysis in helping military operations during World War II. Now let's talk about what tools are used to gather weather statistics. Climatologists use computer models of the atmosphere, ocean, and land surface and data from satellite observations. These models help climatologists determine whether unusual weather patterns are the result of climate change or are just part of weather variation. Satellite data can inform climatologists about the atmospheric and surface temperatures, cloud fraction, and water content, and surface conditions such as moisture. So I'm going to give a few examples just so you get a better understanding of how this method is used. So, for example, if you wanted to predict the weather for New York City on July 4th, you would review all the weather statistics that were recorded for every previous July 4th and calculate the average. For example, if the averages were 87 degrees with 0.18 inches of rain, then the weather forecast for New York City on July 4th would be a temperature of 87 degrees with 0.18 inches of rain. Another example would be if you wanted to predict the weather for the upcoming Labor Day in Hamilton, you would look at the averages for Labor Day in Hamilton. So now the real question is if this method is actually effective. Well, the climatology method is an easy way of predicting the weather only if the weather patterns for that specific location remain steady. This means that the weather pattern needs to be similar to the weather expected for the chosen date and location. For example, if the previous years all had weathers that were significantly different, then it would be difficult to calculate an average. Outside factors such as global warming can affect the weather patterns. Global warming can increase the intensity of some types of extreme weather. For example, it can cause heavier rainfall since more water would evaporate from lakes and oceans, which would allow the atmosphere to hold more moisture. Therefore, the climatology method will not be effective if the weather patterns are not steady. So the next method I'm going to be discussing is a numerical weather prediction. The numerical weather prediction uses forecast models that run on supercomputers to provide information about conditions in the atmosphere, such as temperature, pressure, wind, and rainfall. A forecaster analyzes the data predicted by the computer to determine the weather forecast for the day. Now let's talk about the history of this method. The numerical weather prediction method was first seen in 1904 when a Norwegian physicist named Wilhelm Jørgensen published a paper about forecasting the weather by solving a system of nonlinear partial differential equations. In the 1920s, a mathematician named Lewis Fry Richardson began to develop different techniques and procedures to solve the equations created by Jørgensen. While working in the ambulance unit during World War I, Richardson made a prediction for the change in pressure at a single location over a six-hour period, which took him 6 weeks to calculate. His prediction was unrealistic, but his effort was a peek into the future of weather forecasting, and the use of mathematics for weather forecasting did develop over the years. As I said before, the numerical weather prediction uses models that run on supercomputers. Meteorologists use supercomputers that are complete with software forecasting models to help make numerical weather predictions. They run numerical models on the ocean, atmosphere, and space. The Weather and Climate Operational Supercomputer System is the foundation of numerical forecasting. It has a 5.78 petaflop capacity, which means it can process quadrillions of calculations per second. Supercomputers are about 6 million times more powerful than the average desktop computer. The numerical forecast models use observational data collected by Doppler radar, weather balloons, weather satellites, buoys, and other instruments to predict any kind of weather hazard possible. After the model collects the data, they use equations with old and new data to produce a forecast. Now I'm going to be giving an example of how this method is used to give you a better understanding. Numerical forecasts are produced every day around the world in locations such as the ECMWF, the NMC, US military facilities, Tokyo, Moscow, London, and Melbourne. Numerical forecasts that are made to predict more details are used in smaller regions. The mathematical laws describing the actions in the atmosphere run forward in time, so meteorologists can calculate how each atmospheric variable changes during each time block. The time between each block is about 15 minutes. Once the calculations are complete, meteorologists have a slightly different model than the initial condition. The initial condition of the model is the state of the atmosphere at the starting time. Most of the information for initial conditions come from weather balloons that take measurements of temperature, pressure, winds, humidity, etc. After these calculations, meteorologists can calculate a new set of data based on the new model. The final result is a numerical model that evolves over time, which will hopefully predict the changes that will occur in the actual atmosphere. So, is this method really effective? Well, unfortunately, the predictions made by the atmospheric models are not always accurate. The first reason why the predictions are not always exact is because the equations lack precision. Some of the processes in the atmosphere can be too complex to model with atmospheric models, which can lead to more errors in the predictions. Another reason why numerical weather predictions are not accurate is because the initial conditions are not accurate. This is due to the fact that all measurements have errors. In addition, there are gaps in the initial data since there are places where there are no weather observation stations, such as the ocean, unpopulated areas, or on the mountains. When there are some missing data points, the models have to estimate the missing data between the available points. As the distance between the available data points increases, it makes it more difficult for the models to estimate, and the chance of an error can go up. It is important that the initial conditions are accurate because even if the equations were perfect, but the initial conditions are not completely accurate, the computer's prediction of how the initial state will change will not be accurate. Okay, so now let's talk about weather modification. So, cloud seeding is the most common method of weather modification. Clouds carry water, and when water molecules in the clouds are spread out, they are not dense enough to fall to the ground. But when water molecules are clustered together, they become more dense and eventually fall to the ground as precipitation. Cloud seeding is a type of weather modification that scientists use that involves adjusting a cloud structure to increase the chance of precipitation. So I'm going to be talking about the history of this method, just like I did with the other ones. So, in 1946, a famous surface scientist named Irving Langmuir introduced cloud seeding in a lab at General Electric. His colleagues, Vincent Schaefer and Bernard Vonnegut, discovered that silver iodide particles could convert supercooled water vapor into ice crystals at temperatures of negative 10 to negative 5 degrees Celsius. Clouds form when supercooled water vapor condenses and freezes into ice nuclei, which are particles that are made out of dust and bacteria. The scientists determined that if precipitation must be limited by the shortage of ice nuclei in the air, then they need to begin injecting artificial nuclei into the clouds. The scientists found that silver iodide was a good seeding agent to inject the clouds with because its hexagonal crystal lattice has similar physical characteristics to a lattice that water molecules form in ice. Now let's talk about what tools are used for cloud seeding. Cloud seeding involves adding ice-like particles to clouds by either using large cannons that shoot the particles into the sky, or by using airplanes that drop the particles from above. The most common chemical use for cloud seeding is silver iodide because it has similar physical characteristics to ice crystals. Another technique used to seed clouds with silver iodide is by dissolving the chemical in a solution of sodium iodide in acetone. The solution is then burned in a well-ventilated chamber, which then produces a large amount of ice nuclei. Another agent that can be used for cloud seeding is dry ice because its temperature is so low that it causes ice crystals to form from water vapor. Dry ice is delivered to clouds by an airplane that flies above the clouds. Dry ice is not as effective as silver iodide when being delivered to supercooled regions because once a piece of dry ice is evaporated, it can no longer affect the cloud. So to give you a better understanding of this method, I'm going to give you some real-life examples. One example is ski resorts use cloud seeding to increase snowfall. In Colorado, more than 100 cloud seeding machines are used in mountainside backyards. The machines are large metal boxes covered with solar panels and weather sensors. Silver iodide particles are used to seed the clouds, which help form ice crystals, which later become snowflakes. The cost of generating cloud seeding machines in Colorado costs $1 million per year, which is paid by the state, ski resorts, local water users, and water districts. Water districts help pay for the cost because they want to increase snowmelt in the Colorado River since most of the river basin is experiencing a drought. Another way of how cloud seeding is used is for managing hail. In Alberta, cloud seeding is used to reduce the damage caused by hail. Cloud seeding increases the amount of ice pellets in hail-producing clouds, but also decreases the size of each pellet. Cloud seeding is also used by hydroelectric companies to increase snowfall, which means more water for electricity. Idaho Power is a hydroelectric company that has a cloud seeding program. The program began in 2003 to increase snowfall in the south and middle forks of the Payette River watershed. Their program uses ground-based generators and airplanes to target the Payette River. So now let's conclude this podcast with discussing if cloud seeding is effective or not. Cloud seeding comes with many benefits. The main advantage of cloud seeding is that when it's done correctly, it can produce more precipitation. Scientists have calculated that cloud seeding can increase rainfall in a clear atmosphere by as much as 35%. This has a positive impact on countries that experience droughts. Droughts occur when there is a lack of precipitation and can cause reduced soil moisture and crop damage. The lack of moisture in areas with droughts can cause precipitation to evaporate before it hits the ground. Inserting more nuclei into those clouds can cause heavier rainfalls that can potentially reach the ground before evaporating. When droughts are stopped by cloud seeding, farmers will be able to produce crops that are better quality, which can help them make more money. Since cloud seeding can produce more precipitation, it can also boost groundwater supply. The UAE began using cloud seeding in the 1990s to produce a year's worth of intermittent rain. According to the head of cloud seeding at the National Center of Meteorology, the process of cloud seeding has increased the chance of rain by 30%. The UAE is using cloud seeding to increase groundwater supply since the desert country has an annual average rainfall of only 100 millimeters. An increase in groundwater supply means more drinking water for the country's population and irrigation to grow crops. So these statistics clearly prove that cloud seeding is an effective method of weather modification. So that wraps up this week's episode for Thunderbolt Earth. Make sure to stay tuned for next week's episode and don't forget to tweet me any ideas for next week's topic. See you in the next episode!